about more of their summer programming.
Yeah, I would have loved to have been a kid librarian
when
I was a kid. That'd be so much fun.
Yeah. They get to pick out a display of books and kind of talk about their favorites and stuff like that. We're going to find more about that, though, at 8:45. And then at 9 o'clock, Headwaters, I'm your host today. And Request Line theme songs about smiling, as it is Smile Power Day as far as a national day goes. The power of a smile. Share your song suggestions, 218-326-1234.
And we've been hearing quite a few responses already this morning. Some songs that are new to me.
Yeah, for sure. And keep them coming, 218-326-1234. And you can answer our question of the week, favorite ways to eat ice cream, whether that's, you know, ice cream treat or something you would get at an ice cream truck or what you like to put on your ice cream, favorite flavors, 218-326-1234. Right now, we continue with headlines from National Public Radio.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. President Trump says an agreement to end the war between the U.S. and Iran will be signed later this week in Switzerland. Pakistan mediated the deal, which is also meant to end the fighting in Lebanon involving Israel and Hezbollah, as NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
Pakistan's prime minister says there will be a, quote, immediate and permanent termination of military operations on all fronts, including in Lebanon. The official signing ceremony is set for this Friday in Switzerland, and there will be technical talks before then. Iran's deputy foreign minister tells state media that once the U.S. lifts its naval blockade and the deal is signed, there will be a 60-day period of negotiations on other issues. At the top of Iran's list, the end of all U.S. sanctions. President Trump wants Iran to give up its nuclear ambitions, but his message on Truth Social focused on the first step, getting oil flowing through the Strait of Hormuz. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
President Trump is on his way to France for this week's G7 summit. NPR's Franco Ordonez has more.
President Trump will meet with French President Emmanuel Macron, among other European leaders who he has quarreled with over trade, Ukraine, and security. A senior U.S. administration official not authorized to speak publicly said Trump will also visit with Middle Eastern leaders and attend a working session with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and G7 leaders. The official added that Trump will, quote, meet with G7 leaders to address key issues of shared importance. But ongoing tensions in the Middle East will undoubtedly color the week of talks. Trump has bilateral meetings planned with the leaders of Qatar, the UAE, Egypt, and India. Franco Ordonez, NPR News.
Georgia's governor is calling state lawmakers into special session this week to examine how the state will process ballots in the November elections. Raul Bally with member station WABE in Atlanta says Georgia's voting system has been a target of President Trump's for years.
Georgia's current voting system prints out a voter's choices and a QR code, which is what is counted. After his 2020 loss in Georgia, Trump and his allies claim votes had been deleted or switched. A 2024 Republican-backed state law bans the use of QR codes to count ballots after July 1st of this year. Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger hopes lawmakers extend the deadline rather than switch to something like paper ballots.
Marks can be incomplete and human interpretation is necessary.
Georgia's ballot includes the re-election bid of John Ossoff, the only Democratic incumbent U.S. Senator running this year in a state won by Trump in 2024. For NPR News, I'm Raul Bally in Atlanta.
This is NPR News from Washington. The Carolina Hurricanes are Stanley Cup champions for the second time. Carolina beat the Vegas Golden Knights last night 3-0. The Hurricanes won the NHL's championship series 4-2. Carolina's captain, Jordan Staal, was named the series' most valuable player.
It's amazing. This is something I've been going after ever since we got the first one. I mean, you would want to win it again and again and again. And what a feeling, what a battle the boys were grinding today. My goodness, what so many individual efforts just to keep the puck out of our net. And it was an amazing ride. And I'm just so proud of these guys.
Carolina won its first Stanley Cup 20 years ago. Steven Spielberg's science fiction thriller Disclosure Day was number one at the box office over the weekend. NPR's Bob Mondello reports.
Aliens may or may not be lurking among us, but movie patrons have been hanging on to the possibility this weekend.
What are you gonna do?
Full disclosure to the whole world. All at once.
Disclosure Day opened to the whole world all at once, and in 3 days racked up ticket sales of $93 million, about $44 million of it in North America. That's Spielberg's best start for a film that wasn't a sequel. Also performing well, the low-budget thriller Obsession, which has now had four consecutive holdover weeks with higher ticket sales than its opening, unheard of for horror films. Obsession has taken in more than a quarter of $1 billion worldwide, about 300 times what it cost to make. Bob Mondello, NPR News.
Wall Street futures are higher this morning. Oil prices are lower. I'm Dave Mattingly in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include DuckDuckGo, who believes that AI is hard to avoid right now. That's why they made a version of their private search engine without AI. Learn more at DuckDuckGo.com.
6 minutes after 8 o'clock, and you're listening to the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Andrew DeZingle.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Support comes from Watermark Arts Center in downtown Bemidji with four galleries, art classes for adults and children, and a retail art gallery, Shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public. More at watermarkartscenter.org.
We also receive support from ICTV, providing information for and about Itasca County on Apple TV, Roku, and watch ICTV.org. We just got a text from Lisa, who said, "It's a beautiful morning," describes what I see outside, and it's a song by the Rascals. I think it will fit your theme today. The lyrics say, "I think I'll just go outside for a while and just smile."
You know, the Rascals song I know is it Good Lovin'?
Mm-hmm.
Good Lovin'. No.
Good Lovin'. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Good Lovin'. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. Why can't I?
Boom, 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 boom. But yeah, it's a beautiful morning.
Oh, I didn't know that was the Rascals.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Rascals are kind of underrated in my opinion.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hot take. So Jennifer, are you watching World Cup games?
I have not. I'm not opposed to doing that. I think I can watch them on Tubi. Some of them.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah. And then... So I watched the first game. I believe it was Mexico versus South Africa. So I watched that game, watched Mexico win. And you can always tune in on Fridays here on KXE during the morning show around 8:30, 8:40 time, where DJ Dang joins the morning show crew to do Football is Life, giving us updates on what is happening in the World Cup right now.
That's right. And we do have last week's conversation of both the sports page and a Football is Life that is at KAXC.org right now. And yeah, it's been lots of fun. Chris Walker joining in those conversations, KAXC's former development director, but a huge, huge football fan, I would say. And Malachi Coons and Megan Buffington's been joining in. It's been lots of fun.
And I believe the next USA game is this Friday as well.
Okay.
So I hope we get a preview on the morning show about it.
I'm sure we will. And yeah, let us know what you've been watching as far as World Cup, what excites you about it. We'd always love to hear your thoughts. Text those in 218-326-1234.
I just can't imagine, like, because they're playing in all of North America,
mm-hmm.
and being like a team where you have to like fly to Canada one day and then like, I don't know, Vegas the next day.
Yeah, the scheduling all of that and the travel involved, it seems like kind of a logistical headache. I was going to say nightmare, but nightmare is too strong of a word. Yeah, but just figuring all that out, somebody's job, many people, I don't know.
And it looks like, and I've been seeing videos of like people from other countries visiting American places and like everyone being very welcoming of them.
Good.
Like I saw a video of this British guy going to an Italian sub sandwich type place in New York. And the guy is just super welcoming and has him come back behind the counter and talking with him. It was very sweet.
Yeah.
We need more videos like that.
Bring it on. It's those are like, you know, bright spots.
Absolutely.
Which we also try to do here at KAXE, and we'll be doing that at 8:45 with kid librarians from the Virginia Public Library. We do have a story from National Public Radio. First, we're going to hear about how the price of crude oil has dropped recently and what, you know, possible deals to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. But then we'll also hear about Iran's national soccer team. They are playing against New Zealand tonight in Los Angeles, which is home to a very large Iranian community. So that is ahead from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep in Washington, D.C.
And May Martinez in Los Angeles, California. The chief negotiator between the U.S. and Iran says there is a deal to end the war that will be signed on Friday. Details, though, aren't public. President Trump says it will lead to the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, and global oil markets responded with their version of a sigh of relief. Crude prices dropped to their lowest levels since the beginning of the war. NPR's Camila Domonoske covers energy. So what do we know about how this deal, once it's signed, will affect the flow of oil?
Yeah, there are still a lot of questions about the exact terms here. We haven't seen the actual text of an agreement yet. President Trump had initially posted online that he was authorizing the toll-free reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. That's the crucial waterway through which about a fifth of the world's oil and liquefied natural gas passed before this conflict. He later wrote that the Strait would reopen after the deal is signed Friday to allow for the removal of mines. The timeline here is a bit murky. But oil markets responded very enthusiastically. Prices for a barrel of crude had been north of $100 a barrel for most of this conflict. Those prices had already been dropping. They fell a lot on Thursday and Friday in anticipation of a deal like this. And when trading reopened after the weekend break on Sunday evening, they dropped even more. I'm looking now, the global benchmark Brent crude is right around $83 a barrel.
Is that what it was before the conflict began?
No. Prices had been down in the 60s. So we're still quite a bit higher than pre-war. And those prices are not likely to come all the way down, at least right away. I spoke with Kevin Book with Clearview Energy Partners, and he says you have to remember that there were important facilities, including oil production fields and refineries and ports, that were shut down or damaged in this conflict. That's going to take time to get those back up and running. Meanwhile, global stockpiles of crude oil were tapped into to compensate for the missing crude during the supply shock. Those need to be refilled. And then there's basic logistics.
In addition, ships that aren't in the Strait right now have to get there to take cargoes away. Those that are in there have to leave. And so it might be a while. The market was in a significant surplus before the war. It's not obvious that we'll be in a surplus anytime soon.
And this is an important point, because those oil prices were actually unusually low right before this conflict started, because the world had too much oil, was producing more than was demanded. That helped blunt the blow of this oil shock these past few months. And it's really not clear if getting back to quote-unquote normal is going to mean a return to that level of oversupply.
So what does this mean for people who drive and have to buy gas in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's going to mean less expensive gasoline. This conflict had pushed prices at the pump up $1.50. The last 3 weeks, prices had been falling, mostly because crude oil was getting cheaper, and that was mostly because of hopes for a deal just like the one that was just announced. So if this sticks, definitely relief for drivers, especially compared to the worst-case scenario, which would be this conflict continuing to drag on and pushing up inflation. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean gas prices snap back to as cheap as they were before the U.S. and Israel attacked Iran.
I'm in California, Camila, so it doesn't matter for me. It's always expensive. NPR's Camila Domonoske, thanks.
Thank you.
Iran's national soccer team is in the United States, having arrived just at the end of the war. The team's first World Cup game is tonight in Los Angeles, home to hundreds of thousands of Iranian Americans, some of whom are torn about who to vote for. NPR's Arzu Rezvani is in L.A.
31-year-old Shahin Ferdowsi is pumped Iran's national soccer team is in town.
I am Iranian. I grew up in L.A., so going to watch my first World Cup game and it being Iran right here in my hometown, that is so fun.
I catch Ferdowsi at Maymouni Cafe, an Iranian bistro he owns on LA's west side. A few months ago, he hosted gatherings for LA Iranians anguished by Iran's deadly crackdown on protesters in January and the war the U.S. and Israel launched soon after. Tonight will be different. He'll be hosting a festive watch party.
That doesn't mean that what's happened is forgotten, but it just means that we need to come together to power forward.
The feelings are more complicated among Ferdowsi's customers.
Yeah, I mean, I feel confused, to be honest.
Pedram Mohammad Hossein has tickets to tonight's game against New Zealand, but he's not sure he can cheer for Iran, as human rights organizations accuse the government there of disappearing dissidents, activists, and protesters.
People are, like, getting killed, getting executed. I don't know if I should go there and, like, you know, wear, like, a T-shirt that says Free Iran or just go regular and just support the team. I have no idea right now what I'm going to do.
Hearing that, his cousin Pedram Kishani breaks into the conversation.
I'm actually very prideful, and I fully support them. It's our country. It's one team coming out of there. And I believe sports are meant to be for entertainment, and that's all it is. You're supposed to keep politics out.
When it comes to Iran, disentangling sports from politics is kind of impossible. Iran's players got their U.S. visas just days before the World Cup kicked off. The State Department denied visas for more than a dozen of the team's support staff for their links to the Revolutionary Guard Corps, the all-powerful branch of Iran's armed forces. This clash between sports and politics may come into even sharper focus tonight. For days, across social media channels, exiled Iranian opposition groups have been discussing protests for inside and outside the stadium. Some groups have chartered buses to bring protesters from across Southern California. At a recent gathering of anti-regime activists in L.A., members discussed props to sneak into the stadium. Blindfolds, nooses, American and Israeli flags, all of it meant to condemn the regime and its players, says protest organizer Fakhte Dabashi.
So we have special plans for inside the stadium for different moments of the game, like showing the hanging when the national anthem is playing or just turning our back to their flag and things like that.
At a press conference in Los Angeles yesterday, Iranian team coach Amir Ghalanoui was asked about protests. We're just interested in playing a good, high-quality match, he told reporters, adding that the team won't pay attention to anything in the stadium beyond the game. FIFA, the organization behind the World Cup, prohibits the display of political signs and images. Security could remove demonstrators from the stadium, pushing Iran's human rights record and reputation of oppression out of view. Arzu Rezvani, NPR News, Los Angeles.
This is NPR News.
It's 18 minutes after 8 o'clock, and you're listening to the Monday Morning Show on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Andrew DeZingle.
Good morning. So, Jennifer, coming up on the bright spot, we have some kid librarians coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious, when you were a kid, was there any series of books that you were really into?
I was into the Ramona books. Although I'm not sure if I originally read them in the correct order, Beverly Cleary's Ramona series.
I'm not familiar with that.
No. Ramona and Beezus and Henry Higgins and the dog Ribsy. No, nothing.
What'd they do? Solve mysteries?
No, they were just kids. Just kids living their lives. Okay. You know, very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
I did like Encyclopedia Brown.
Okay.
Did you ever read those?
Not really.
That was mystery solving. Judy Blume's Fudge series.
Oh.
Which was only three books at the time. There is now a fourth book.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is a series of books by Lois Lowry. Anastasia Krupnik was the girl's name. And there too, it was just like a girl just living her life, you know. But I like these
You love the slice of life books.
I did. Yeah.
See,
about you?
I was really into the Bailey School Kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which was a series of books about like these four kids, and their school always seems to have a possible supernatural person coming into the world. So like the first episode is vampires don't wear polka dots.
Okay.
They suspect their teacher is a vampire.
Yeah.
And then there's like other ones like Santa Claus doesn't clean bathrooms or something like that, where they think their janitor is Santa Claus. Bigfoot doesn't square dance, where they think Bigfoot is this camp counselor at the camp they go to. So just stuff like that.
Those sound fun. I read the Wayside School. There's at least a couple of those. Wayside School is Falling Down and Sideways Stories from Wayside School, which were just like, is like this school building that was several stories. But anyway, the kids, it was basically focused on this one classroom in the school, and just like weird little goofy stuff would happen all the time to their school. And just goofy, like, you know, each chapter was kind of its own self-contained story.
Mm-hmm. What about the Boxcar Children?
You know, I never really got into those. When my son was young, he did a little bit, and then I started reading them, but I didn't.
I only read the first one, and we had them at our house. I think my sister read them all, kind of thing. Maybe my brother did. I should text them. But I sort of got into that one. I was really into the Berenstain Bears chapter books.
There was
the Berenstain Bears regular books. One.
Yep.
And then there was the chapter books. And then they also had their version of Cub Scouts. I don't remember what they were called, though.
Okay.
But those are fun chapter books, too.
Yeah.
Had quite a few of those.
Did you visit a library in your hometown or nearby or a bookmobile or anything when you were a kid?
Okay, so in my hometown, the only library was the one in the school. So we didn't really go to that one during like the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But we did have a bookmobile that came to where I lived in the country. And that was always super fun because they would hide gold coins around the bookmobile. And if you find them, then you can use it to purchase like a little treasure chest bank. Or what's the word I'm looking for?
Like a piggy bank?
Like a piggy bank.
Yeah.
But it's a treasure chest kind of thing. That's the only thing I remember getting. But I remember getting this one book that was filled with like all the monsters from mythology kind of thing. I remember reading that book and being obsessed with it. Otherwise, we would go to the library in Hallock, which was really fun. And then the Thief River Falls library, which had all the Bailey School kids books.
Uh-huh.
So I would just hang out in there reading those.
Yeah. I would, in the summers, once I reached a certain age, I was allowed to walk all the way downtown, which is pretty much clear on the other side of Spicer. Not that it's a big town, but pretty much all the way on the other side. And I could go check out books. And there was some kind of summer reading program, like, you know, just like a sheet to fill out, like how many books you read or something. And there's probably a prize involved. But shout out to Sheila, the librarian. she was just so nice to me, and I'd show up and I'd bring my backpack and, you know, to carry my books back. And I remember I'd have like a little thermos of Kool-Aid because this was such a long walk, you know, I had to stay hydrated.
Yeah, that Kool-Aid will help with that. What was your go-to Kool-Aid flavor?
I liked grape, but really it was whatever my mom bought. And as I mentioned probably several times, my mom was a daycare provider when I was young, all the way till I was 15. But I remember like she would buy, like there'd be a sale at the store of the packets of Kool-Aid that you could get for like, I don't know, they'd be like 10 cents or 10 for a dollar or something. So then she'd like, you know, let me pick all the different flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Like get a variety, but you can choose.
So my favorite was by far Blue Raspberry Lemonade. That one tasted so good.
Yeah.
And it was blue, which was my favorite color. but I did enjoy the pink lemonade. Tropical Punch was a classic one. Black Cherry was a huge one in our household.
Okay.
Orange, I guess, sometimes. I wasn't a huge fan of that. That seemed to be the go-to that schools had for like the spaghetti feed type.
Like an orange drink kind of thing. Like,
I don't even think it's Kool-Aid, though.
No. It's like on The Simpsons, and they're at some school event, they tell Willie he has to water down the orange drink.
I can't water it down anymore. Do you remember Sharkleberry Finn?
Oh, gosh, that sounds so familiar, but I don't really know
what it is. Where it's the Kool-Aid man riding a pink shark. I can't. tell what the flavor
was. There something that like changed color once it got cold?
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that kind of Kool-Aid. I don't remember what flavor that was though.
Some kind of color changing technology.
Okay, so Sharkleberry Finn doesn't say what the flavor is supposed to be, but it's on the bag. It says new. It's pink. So it's pink. So whatever flavor that could be.
You know, pink lemonade, pink, you know, I don't know, pink. Pink the flavor. Like purple the flavor isn't really tastes like grape, but.
Okay, here we go. So there was a bunch of ones where they had funny name things. So there was Purplesaurus Rex.
Oh, I remember that.
And Sharkleberry Finn. Great Blue Dini. and then Pink Swimmingo.
Very fun. I don't know
what any of these are, but they're super fruity. It says so on the bag.
It says so. So must be true. Yeah. But, we'd love to hear your library experiences as a kid. You know, where did you go? Did you have a bookmobile? I think we had that as a question of the week a while ago, like maybe last summer, last fall.
Bookmobiles are so cool. Just the concept of just like a
library on wheels?
Yeah.
Yeah. I never got to experience one just because I lived in town that always had a library open. But yeah, I think there definitely was one like that went out to the more rural areas in the community.
And it was fun because they would also have VHS tapes. And I would get one time the Phantom of the Opera, the Lon Chaney senior movie. And I did not know it was a silent movie. I didn't even have the concept of what silent movies were. I just remember seeing the picture a bunch. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, I got to see this horror movie. And then lo and behold, when I watched it, they're not talking. What is going on
here? So you had to read? Like, did it have words on the little placard things?
It did, but it also had the weirdest soundtrack music.
Yeah.
Where it wasn't like a piano playing music like you would think for a regular silent film. It was rock songs, but like they must have been cheap because they were terrible.
Oh.
And all I remember is the one song where it's a phantom looking for a place to hide. And that's stuck with me ever since. And I have no idea who that song was or who it was by, but you know, it's a core memory, I guess.
I guess so. That song sounds like it could fit in on a Scooby-Doo episode or something.
Yeah.
But that's very, very odd that it would have that.
Anyway, I don't think I watched the full movie because I was so disappointed. And I still haven't seen the full thing. And I need to because it's the last movie I need to see in the Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments of All Time.
Well, there you go. You got to get that done.
And that's going to be the Halloween plans this year.
Good.
I'll finally finish the list.
Speaking of libraries, the Arrowhead Library System presents Creature Connections, the Reptile Experience at participating libraries now through June 26. You can see live snakes, lizards, and turtles, plus hands-on moments and engaging storytelling. Find a full list of dates, times, and locations at alslib.info.
And also on our text line, we're looking for songs about smiling for Jennifer's request line on Headwaters. And we heard from Lenore, When I See You Smile by Bemidji band Kaylee, second cut on their CD, Out on a Limb. So,
all right, adding that to the list. Thanks so much, Lenore, for that suggestion. And that's coming up in about 2 hours from now. And that'll be our request line. It is Smile Power Day, a national little recognition of the power of a smile.
Yes, it's infectious, like laughter.
Mm-hmm. You can just brighten someone's day by just giving them a little smile.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever, as a kid, like, you know, they say, don't keep your face like that. It'll stay like that forever.
Yeah.
Did you practice smiles in the mirror when you were a kid?
Not that I recall doing. I remember you'd get these things in school, these tablets you were supposed to chew, and then you were supposed to brush your teeth and see how good you did. Because like it was like this pink stuff that stayed on your teeth. Do you remember this?
No, not for teeth. I remember it for finger or hands.
Oh, hand washing.
It'd be like hand washing, yeah.
Yeah.
But so during school picture day, my mom would get so mad because she would say like, you're fake smiling on these photos. Oh. So I had to start practicing my fake smile to look more realistic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you need to have one ready for the photo opportunities.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
Because mine was just like, you can't see it on the radio.
You can't see your smile, but it was no teeth involved, just kind of like a warrant smile.
Yeah. Even though our school photographer was a funny guy, I forget his name, but he had a mustache and he was funny. You go like, oh, don't smile. Kind of
thing. So you had the same guy every year?
Yeah.
I don't remember it being that consistent at my school.
Did you ever use, what was your go-to background for school photos? Did you ever do the laser one?
No, I don't think we had that.
You didn't have option for lasers?
We didn't have any option. It was just like the kind of gray-beige-y background, I think, except when I was in sixth grade, like kind of middle school years, they started doing spring school pictures.
Really?
Which those had really goofy backgrounds where it was like kind of like a graffiti wall with like a pencil on it.
Cool.
And yeah, those are kind of lame.
And so you would have to do one in the fall and then one in the spring?
Yeah. And I think I only ordered the spring ones one time. And then it was like, yeah, you don't need to keep getting these.
So what would the yearbook use?
The fall ones.
So what was the spring ones for?
Just to for Life Touch to make more money.
Oh, well, good for them, I guess.
Support for KAXE comes from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more online at hottubsmn.com. Right now, it is time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. The Minnesota Department of Human Services says it is resuming payments to most of the providers abruptly cut off from Medicaid funding in May. More than 3,000 care providers across 13 Medicaid services had their funding paused as the state rushed to meet a federal deadline to screen providers. The Minnesota Reformer reports the state notified providers on Wednesday that it would reinstate payment to those that had appealed their termination to ensure Medicaid recipients keep getting care. Carrie Guida is the executive director of the Pine River Group Home, which had its billing suspended. In an interview before the reinstatement was announced, she said it was disingenuous for DHS to say they did their job. Sue Shettle is the CEO of the Association of Residential Resources in Minnesota. She told the Reformer the resumption of payments is a recognition that providers that did nothing wrong need to keep getting paid for services. 1 year ago this weekend, political violence shook the core of many Minnesotans with the fatal shooting of Melissa Hortman and an attack on another legislator. A national organization warns that online hate is only getting worse. The murder of Hortman and her husband, along with the shooting of fellow state lawmaker John Hoffman and his wife, heightened calls for an end to hateful rhetoric linked to political attacks and threats against elected officials. Imran Ahmed of the Center for Countering Digital Hate says their new report shows that since Meta relaxed Facebook's rules on harassment and violent language in early 2025, there's been a noticeable difference.
We found that violent threats targeting bipartisan Congress members increased 4 times in the 6 months after Meta made their policy changes, and abusive comments overall, including harassment, tripled.
Report authors analyzed nearly 8 million Facebook comments. In defending its recent policy changes, Meta officials argue there's a need to protect free speech. But Ahmed counters that in the past, other industries faced accountability concerns, and society enacted safeguards without stopping them from operating. Ahmed says until big tech firms look themselves in the mirror, the courts are the best avenue to hold social media platforms accountable. This year, plaintiffs secured civil penalty victories in a pair of cases. Ahmed cautions that a lack of reforms makes it hard for other cases to succeed. Another antidote for all these complications is for people to police themselves.
We have to look ourselves in the face and say, well, is this the country that we want for ourselves? Because every time we threaten or terrorize a politician out of office, our democracy dies a little bit.
Ahmed acknowledges there's no real way for them to know how bots factor into research like this. He says that's because only social media companies themselves know the IP addresses that can aid in making that distinction. He says that's another reason these firms need to be more transparent. Minnesota is doing a better job helping households with kids escape poverty, but an annual well-being summary says education results are still on shaky ground several years after the COVID-19 pandemic. The Annie E. Casey Foundation's Kids Count data book again places Minnesota among the top states for overall performance. For economic stability, it's now second in the nation. Alex Fitzsimmons with the Children's Defense Fund Minnesota says the state's version of a child tax credit adopted in 2023 appears to be a force, pointing to data from the first year.
More than 200,000 families and more than 400,000 children benefited from that credit, which is tremendous.
She says delivery of the tax credit makes a difference, giving families the option to receive a portion in advance payments. For education, almost 7 out of 10 fourth graders aren't proficient in reading. Fitzsimmons points out they were preschoolers early on during the pandemic. Because of the lingering impacts, she feels the state should use every resource available to boost access to early childhood education. The Casey Foundation's Leslie Passier says student achievement concerns are a big reason why policymakers can't let up in making sure kids have access to basic needs.
If a child is hungry or if they're in an unstable housing situation, it's difficult for them to focus in school.
Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for these stories. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
The Up North Report here on KAXE. You can find lots of local news stories at our website, kaxe.org, plus conversations from our morning show and music conversations, lots more at kaxe.org.
Yeah, including fresh picks. Look at some of the standout albums and tracks we're adding to our studio playlist every week.
Yeah, ones that are kind of standing out to folks on staff, and more on the album of the week. And that reminds me, I've got to do my Blondie paragraph for the Fresh Picks, because we're also including our Picks of 76 in that, as we are celebrating 50 years of KAXE and looking back on the year of our founding.
And it's always fun for the Picks of 76 to see which songs volunteers gravitate towards as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember hearing Thin Lizzy's Cowboy Song a lot during the jailbreak.
Oh, yeah.
Week, which is my favorite song on the album, and it was great to hear everyone else loves it, too.
Yeah, some definitely you hear more than others, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
When it was Queen, we were hearing that one song a lot. I can't remember what the song was now, but...
The Modern Lovers was a fun one. Yeah. Because that album has a lot of great tracks, but it's only like 7 songs.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun.
For sure. That is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm Jennifer Barr. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to have our Bright Spot. We're going to meet kid librarians from the Virginia Public Library, as well as Youth Services librarian Crystal Macias. That is coming up in a few minutes here on KAXE. And then 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters. I'll be sticking around, your host for that. Have the slice of green cheese at 9:45, and then Request Line, songs about smiling.
So, Jennifer, we were talking earlier. Have you got your first song picked out yet?
I do.
We're getting closer.
We are.
So you're ready.
I am ready.
Can't wait.
Right now, we are going to hear some music. This was actually suggested by Lisa, and it could go into our request line, but I feel like the earlier we play it, the better, because it is a beautiful morning.
It's a beautiful
sunshine caresses each new waking hour. Seems to me that people keep seeing more and more each day.
Gotta say,
lead the way.
It's okay.
Gotta say, it's okay.
All right.
Gotta say, lead the way.
Oh.
Oh. Oh.
That is The Rascals with A Beautiful Morning here on KAXC and the Monday Morning Show. I'm Jennifer Barr with Andrew DeZingle.
Good morning.
And we are ready for our bright spot. We are going to be talking with kid librarians from Virginia Public Library as well as their librarian. Bright spot is a chance to highlight good things happening in northern Minnesota. Today, we are learning about the Kid Librarian Program at Virginia Public Library. Joining us now are Kid Librarians BT and Iker, plus Youth Services Library Associate Crystal Macias. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us. It's good to see you.
Hi. Nice to see you, too. We have BT with us today.
Just BT. Okay. Sounds good. And Crystal, first of all, can you explain the Kid Librarian Program and kind of how that came about?
Absolutely. So the Radford Public Library in the state of Virginia posted about it on the American Library Association website. And having North Star Elementary next door, I felt like it was the perfect way to involve some of the children from the school. But it kind of grew. So I got 11 applications from the school alone from just one class. And then I started opening it up here at the library after our first one came in. And we've had 26 applications so far.
Fantastic.
Yes.
So, BT, I'm going to ask you some questions. You had to answer a bunch of questions to be a kid librarian. Can you share how you answered what your favorite books are? I'll start with that one.
Books about sports and books that have animals.
So she said funny books, books about sports, and books that have animals.
Yeah, fantastic.
So what does the kid librarian get to do as part of this program?
So the kid librarians get an opportunity to create a display for our checkout counter, and they pick books either that their favorite authors, their favorite topics, and they take a lot of care and a lot of planning to create their displays.
And BT, you had to answer your favorite thing about the Virginia Public Library. What was that?
Favorite thing about the Virginia Public Library is being able to read any book you want.
Being able to read any book you want. I like that. No limits. How old are you, BT? What grade did you just finish?
Second.
So going into third, that's exciting.
So, Crystal, question for you. What you had such a strong reaction of kids wanting to be involved with this. What do you think it was about it that kids were eager to participate in this program?
So we had a lot of participation from nearby schools, but really just the community is a huge supporter of the library. And we have a lot of programs for the youth, so we get a lot of them here to begin with. And I think just being able to be more a part of the library that they're here to participate in anyway, I mean, it's such a nice experience because we also put their picture, if their parent and the child consent, of course, we put their picture up on our wall. We have a little staff photo for them and they get an opportunity to tell us a little bit about themselves with the questions that they get. I think they just really like being a part of something.
Yeah. Why did you want to be a kid librarian, BT?
To share my favorite books with everyone.
Share your favorite books with everyone. I love that. It's fun when you really like a book to tell other people about it, isn't it? Crystal, there is so much going on at the Virginia Public Library this summer. This week alone, there's a teen dream catcher craft, a Rubik's Cube competition, and a frog and toad picnic. Can you tell us a bit more about some of these?
Absolutely. We are in the swing of our summer reading program. Our theme this year is Plant a Seed, Read. So we really wanted to focus on nature and outdoors and just imagination in general. So we have our Rubik's Cube competition this Wednesday at 3 p.m. And we have some returning teen volunteers who are huge into Rubik's Cubes. So they'll be teaching us how to solve them. Then we'll have a little tournament style based on that program alone. We have our Frog and Toad picnic next week on Thursday at 11 a.m. On June 18th. And that is supposed to be, that's this Thursday, June 18th. And it's supposed to be super fun. We have Cesari's Italian Bakery who donated some snacks for us. Our friends of the library donated some food as well. And it's just going to be a really cute picnic. So if you want to bring your own sack lunch, and we'll also be providing some snacks for you.
And how do frogs and toads play into it?
Sure. So, I mean, they're great books and they're great fun and they just are centered around friendship. The Frog and Toad books are. So I think we all need a little bit of friendship and camaraderie this summer, and it'll be really fun to get to see the kids participate in that.
And I hope there's a cookie jar available, because I know there's a famous Frog and Toad story where Frog and Toad can't stop eating from the cookie jar.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to come and be surprised to see what the story brings for us.
And there's so much else going on the rest of the summer, too. There's jellyfish games on July 30th, and then a fairy escape room that can be reserved in August. Can you tell us a little bit more on those?
Yeah, what's jellyfish games?
So jellyfish games is the family-friendly version of Squid Games, so minus the danger, but it's supposed to be a lot of fun. We're taking a lot of the inspiration from the games from the TV show. So I really urge people to come and be ready to compete. Grab your number as soon as you get here. For our fairy escape room, every year or so, we try to do something different. Last year, it was Mario Party. This year, we are focusing on a very whimsical, nature-inspired fairy escape room. You need to help us find the secret of the guardian fairy. So I hope everyone signs up. You can do so by calling the library at 218-748-7525. But that'll be in August, so just keep an eye on our socials for that.
Yeah, I was going to ask how folks can best keep up with all the events you do have going on. I do know you have a very active Facebook page.
We do. Sam, our librarian here, our library tech here, he's pretty amazing at making sure that we're up to date and informing the community. And we try to post really frequently to make sure that everyone knows what we're up to at the library. So please keep an eye on our socials, follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram. But we just have such a great following of here at the library. And I feel like getting our information on social media is the only way to let them know what we have going on apart from our website.
Yeah. And BT, are you looking forward to going to some of these library programs this summer too? Yeah. Great. And if kids are interested in becoming kid librarians, what is the process like?
Sure. So just come on over to the library. We have a very small application that you fill out, and you just put on there your name, your contact information, and then we'll give you a call or we'll send your parents an email when it's your turn. Something I do want all of the kid librarians who apply to loan is that everyone will have a chance. Everyone who applies will become a kid librarian. We just might take a few weeks or a couple months to get to your name, so don't be discouraged, but we invite everyone to participate. This is really for, there isn't a set age limit to this. I'm saying more of like 12 and under, but hey, if you're 14 and want to be a part of our library as well, come on over.
All right.
Yeah, you get to be a mini influencer with the display case.
Yes. And if you post this on your socials and tag the library, I'm not going to be mad at that.
Well, we've been talking with BT, a kid librarian, plus Crystal Macias, Youth Services Library Associate from the Virginia Public Library. Thank you so much for joining us. And Bright Spot is made possible with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. We hope you have a great summer and a great day. And thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day. So bye.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
We're going to hear some music now from California Honey Drops. That is California Honey Drops with 365 flavors. Played that in honor of our question of the week, all about ice cream, your favorite ways to eat ice cream. Text in your answers, 218-326-1234.
Speaking of honey drops, I see a bumblebee outside.
Nice.
They love honey, I think. Do they make honey? I don't know.
They make honey. Maybe. I saw an actual ladybug yesterday. You know, you often, these days, it seems like you just see like those invasive Asian beetles, but this was like a true ladybug. It was on my spirea bush, and I was like, oh, a ladybug.
I don't even know how to tell ladybugs anymore.
They're darker red.
Okay.
They're not
that's
so
what
much
I thought.
Orange. They're more red.
Okay. Good to know. Support for KXE comes from Third Coast Chamber Collective, presenting Adult Chamber Music Retreat, featuring international artists and community musicians in venues across Grand Rapids between June 14th and 20th. More information available at thirdcoastchambercollective.com.
We just had our Bright Spot conversation with a kid librarian, BT, as well as Crystal Macias from Virginia Public Library. And we got a text from Eric who said, libraries are awesome. With my job, I travel and have opportunity to visit many libraries. I stop and work for a bit versus the hotel office. And if you see someone running outside to answer a phone, it might be me. In college, for a quick break, I would grab a random book from the shelf. Some books were hard to put down and go back to the calculus.
That reminds me of a story recently that was in the news where this guy got in trouble for breaking into Barnes & Noble because for the past week, he was going into the store and reading this one book for free during the day, and then he couldn't wait to get to the ending, so he broke into the store to finish the book. The power of books.
I tell you, it's there.
What are you currently reading?
So I just finished a Catherine Center book called The Rom-Commers, which is about a screenwriter and this woman who gets hired to help him. He usually writes movies that are like more action movies, but he is writing a rom-com to try to get another one of his movies published, but it's terrible. So this kind of unknown woman comes in to help him, and of course they're going to fall in love. But there's that. And so then I just started last night Atmosphere by Taylor Jenkins Reid, which is about kind of a fictionalized version of NASA in the 80s.
Okay. I'm currently reading the autobiography of Liza Minnelli. I think it's called Kids, Wait Till You Hear This. And it's been interesting. She loves to bring up her mom. Like there's one time early in the book that she mentions a story where she was like a toddler and she accidentally kicked her mom in the head. And she keeps bringing it up in the book. Oh. It really stuck with her.
Huh.
Very, very
was her,
odd.
Was your mom upset?
She didn't yell at Liza, but she did have to go into another room and be quiet in there. So it really stuck with Liza. But we're into the section where she just made Cabaret and Liza with a Z. And now we're going to get into the 80s, I believe.
Okay. Last week we had a book conversation on the Thursday morning show with Tammy Bobrowski and Chelsea Perkins and Heidi Holton and Kari Hedlund. And that will be headed to our website later today, KAXE Bookshelf, that will be called. So you can tune in or find that at KAXE.org.
And we had a recent conversation with the new bookstore in Bemidji, Forbidden Love. And where we're reading article is online where Dan Gann and I investigate what the romance genre is all about with the owner of Forbidden Love.
All that at KAXE.org. Support comes from Happy Dancing Turtle, a nonprofit organization dedicated to growing stewards through education, programs, and experiences. More information at happydancingturtle.org.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, celebrating 50 years of people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
A reminder that our translator in Brainerd at 89.9 is currently operating at reduced power. We are waiting for additional parts and a crew to complete that job, and we thank you so much for your patience. We know this has been ongoing for a while. Our weather for today, mostly sunny, slight chance of showers late this afternoon, highs 73 to 77 with breezy west wind. And tonight, chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the 40s, and tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs 67 to 71. And looking ahead to Wednesday, good chance for rain, possible thunderstorms, highs